Marion County Trail could be the best value in bourbon-themed travel in Kentucky. You'll experience one of the Kentucky Bourbon Trail's crown jewels, one of the Bourbon Trail Craft Tour's top-rated stops, and something you can't find anywhere else. Organized tours of a bourbon barrel manufacturing facility, all in one place. It's the Marion County Trail. Take your time to tour, dine, shop, and stay all along the way. Explore world-famous Maker's Mark, a hot ticket item on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, Limestone Branch Distillery, home of world-famous Yellowstone Bourbon, and one of the top-rated stops on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail Craft Tour. Kentucky Cooperage, the sprawling plant where the thriving bourbon industry's barrels are hand-built and seared with fire for bourbon-aging flavor. And Lebanon, home of wonderful dining opportunities from home-cooked to chef-driven. Unique shopping opportunities, nowhere else to be found murals for your selfies, and overnight accommodations that range from traditional to bed and breakfast to bourbon-themed. Go to visitlebanonky.com for more details. Lebanon Tourist and Convention Commission, 270-692-0021.
It's the Bow Brothers for Two Shots on a Barrel. We can't thank you enough for joining in and listening to our show today. We do want to remind you, go out there and give us a review. Isn't that important, J-Bo?
It's very important for us to grow and to reach a larger audience. So please do it for us.
We got a cool thing out on Facebook. We got a Facebook group you can join. You can follow along with all kinds of crazy stuff that you put out there.
That's just the way it is. It's fun. It's good times. It's private. So we don't share anything off that page. It's strictly right there on Two Shots on a Barrel family.
Yeah, another cool thing we got, we have some fantastic sponsors we'll showcase throughout the show today, and we want to appreciate and show our respect for all of those. And for more information on that, you'll be able to catch the ad or go to our Facebook page and check those out. There you go. All right, it's without further ado, Two Shots on a Barrel podcast.
Old boys ain't much for working. Two shots on a barrel, and they're talking about bourbon, talking about a few other things that they don't know. If you've got a question, no need to ask. They don't have a clue, so raise your glass. Take a sip with the Bold Brothers. Now it's on with the show. From the heart of Central Kentucky, the bourbon capital of the world, it's Two Shots on a Barrel with your host, a couple of hot shots of their own, the Bow Brothers.
Well, we're back in the studio once again. Man, having some good old bourbon right here with Mr. Jim Reed and a very special guest today.
We do have a special guest, and I'm looking forward to the show. I mean, this is one that, you put on the schedule and you, like, circle it about 50 times, and you're like, I'm excited about this show, and so we'll get into that for sure here in a second. There's some other topics that we want to get to before we get into the heat of the matter. Number one, the Kentucky Bourbon Festival tickets are now going to be on sale April 17th, so we're getting ever so close to the Kentucky Bourbon Festival tickets going on sale. So make sure you check out kybourbonfestival.com, J-Bo.
Absolutely. If you're a bourbon fanatic, there's no place in the world you'd rather be than to be at this bourbon festival, because I'm way off on the numbers. Can't remember because I was drunk and didn't pay attention when they told us how many vendors were there. But there's more bourbon than you can drink in a weekend at this event.
There's a whole bunch of bourbon. You found some at last year's bourbon festival, you found one of your new favorites.
I know, and RD1. Yeah, RD1 is fantastic.
Yeah, so anyway, make sure you check out KY Bourbon Festival. Put a little reminder on your phone, because that's coming up. Tickets go on sale April 17th. We have put in the official media request, and as far as I know, we have no real reason that they'll turn us down, but it'll be our fourth year going to the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, so we're excited about that. J-Bo, how are your NCAA brackets?
I think I put them in the garbage. Not quite sure, but I'm pretty sure most of mine are in the garbage, and Salem's still holding his up, bragging, as you found out on the way in.
Yeah, I get all that. It has been a fairly chalky tournament, with exception to if you're from the Big Blue Nation.
Oh, Lord.
What's your, the big news post the upset was, of course, John Calipari.
Right.
And it's been all about John Calipari and whether he's going to stay or go? What's your official take on the John Calipari stay or be gone story?
Well, for me, man, I feel like I'm attached to him in a way because we've done father-son camps with him. We've done all these satellite camps with him. So he's always just been like the coolest guy. Anything you want, he always takes care of you. But you got to separate that from wanting to win basketball games. And we're not winning basketball games like Kentucky needs to win basketball games. So everything runs its course, and I think the course is finished for Cal. I think he's gone.
So through all that diatribe that you just went through and didn't really answer the question, do you believe that Cal will not be back next year as the University of Kentucky coach? And do you want Cal back next year?
I want Cal back. I'm one of a few, just because for what I told you, because my little guy in the other room is going to be heartbroken.
Okay.
That's my main reason. We need a new coach, though.
Okay.
We do need a new coach.
All right.
But that's my reason right there.
All right.
He'll be heartbroken.
So as we're recording today's show, supposedly there's a lot of moving parts, and we will know soon enough whether Cal will be back. And,
but you know what? Louisville needs a coach, and they could be Cal's cards. You never know.
I had a guy,
how they love U of K coaches going to U of L.
No, listen, I had a guy on on Main Street today. We were talking, of course, what everybody else in the Commonwealth is talking about, and that is Kentucky and Cal and U of L. This guy said, I tell you what's going to happen. Cal is going to end up at the University of Louisville.
That'd be so funny.
And if that were to happen, it's like lightning striking twice.
That's right. So I put on Facebook, if you follow me, I put Cal's cards in a blue jay flapping its wings.
Yeah.
It didn't go over well.
You were stirring the crap, I know, with the U of L stuff. And you also, would you please get off this deal about my Amish hat that you keep saying? It's not a damn Amish hat, and I don't have an Amish beard, and you're getting on my last nerve with that Amish stuff.
Everybody follow Jim Reed on Facebook. Look at his pictures from the Raleigh Ring concert. And tell me if that's not an Amish hat and Amish beard. And the only thing that's not Amish is your beautiful wife and kids. They, like, came and picked you up from the Amish camp.
You do realize that I have a lot of pictures in my arsenal.
You do.
That I'm ready to just unload on you. It's going to be a nuclear unloading.
Bring it on, big dog.
And it's going to happen. And you got a lot of ugly pictures in my arsenal.
Yeah, that's fine, man. I'm good.
Maybe not with any with what you call an Amish hat, but dude, that time you dressed up in a baby diaper, that one's about ready to hit.
That was for a good cause.
All right, let's get to today's show. We're excited. We told you about this one. I circled this one because it's just intriguing what they've got going on. We welcome in our buddy Chris Moss with Oak and Match, Camelsville, Kentucky. Woo-hoo! Welcome to Two Shots.
What's going on, guys? Thank y'all for having me over here. I got to tell you how excited I am to be here. The funnest part, though, is sitting here listening to you guys banter. You guys are entertaining me all the way.
Look, did you notice all the holes in the walls where I push him out of his chair?
Is that what that's about? I'm trying to kind of like play around the room here and see what's going on.
See, he does all this stuff. He does all this stuff, Chris, and he does it because he's embarrassed of himself, and he doesn't want to – he can't make fun of himself, so he uses me.
Look over in that corner. What's that sign say in that corner up on the wall there?
The left of the lamp there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say, the beard to me looks legendary.
I appreciate you, brother.
I don't have a problem with that at all. Haven't seen the Amish hat yet.
Yes.
But how bad can it be?
Look, we went to the Bourbon Festival, and they had a beard booth there, and the guys laughed at his beard. So, I mean, it's not quite legendary yet.
Wait. Step out from around the mic a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that, man. That's fine.
No, listen.
It's well-maintained.
It is.
All right. I'm going to try to keep this show on cue, on point today, because J-Bo has a tendency of taking us off tracks. And today, man, this is all about Oak and Match. I got to tell you, man. It is. We've been following along with Oak and Match, and for those of you out there that are like, "What's Oak and Match?" Chris, I want you to kind of give everybody a little bit of a summary. What is Oak and Match?
Oh man, how can I summarize this up all in one thing? Oak and Match is what we wanted for Elk and Match was always to be something a little bit different. A little bit different than anything you've experienced before. Part of what we're trying to do here with the craftsmanship we're doing in the cocktails, okay, part of what we're trying to do is bring a lot of bourbon awareness back to Central Kentucky and bring a selection back to Central Kentucky that has never been really available before. We are bourbon enthusiasts where we are, but we are spirit enthusiasts too. I mean, we really work hard on the cocktails. We've resurrected cocktails that are well over 100 years old, and some of them even older than that, bringing back the craftsmanship into the cocktail industry. United States has been in what's called the cocktail renaissance for a very long time, and it's very slow to absorb into the state of Kentucky. But we're trying to bring some of that enthusiasm back. And what we have found is, quite simply to say, the level and the quality of the cocktails that we're producing with some of these old recipes, and we can't take credit for most of them. We've adjusted some of them to more modern palates, but we can't take credit for a lot of them. But we've learned, we've tried to apply what we've learned in all the things that over the years my partner and I, Anthony, have known and have learned about bourbon and the discerning taste differences that there are with all the different products, kind of like the one we're sipping on here right now.
It's okay. Good.
Everything, these are such unique products. And one thing we've learned with bourbon and cocktails is the same way. All of these things are more than a sum of their parts. They're all craftsmanship, kind of brought out into a juice, a spirit, a liquid, anything you want to talk about that is unique in and of itself. And that's what we've kind of tried to do with Oak and Match.
That's so cool. So you guys are out on Facebook. That's where our good buddy Billy Taft told us about Oak and Match. He's like, guys, you got to come over. We checked you out on Facebook, and I got to tell you. And then it's powerful, J-Bo. You know this. Mm-hmm. As powerful as anything is word of mouth.
Yes,
and you keep hearing. The word of mouth is like, man, you got to go see these guys over in Campbellsville at this
speakeasy
kind of cigar lounge. I'm like, you're talking my language right there when you're talking about stuff like that. Facebook page says Prohibition theme, specializing in handcrafted cocktails, featuring a private speakeasy cigar lounge.
That's right up your alley, dude.
I absolutely
cigar
love
king,
it.
Man. Cigar king.
I love cigars. But they're low for you guys that are already, your appetite is wet and you're thinking, where is this? 115 Nancy Cox Drive. It's right there in Campbellsville, Kentucky. Somebody told me the story, Chris, Max Wise, senator that is from the Taylor County area. When you look at Taylor County, there's not a distillery.
No.
in Taylor County.
Working on that. Hopefully.
Yeah, sure. But Max Wise apparently has gone on record as saying, listen, we may not have a distillery in Taylor County, but I am going to tell you, we have absolutely one of the best bourbon lounges, one of the best mixologists in the state of Kentucky, and that's Oak and Match. That's lofty compliments, Chris.
It is. I mean, and Max has been a close personal friend of mine for many years. I got to say, I'm giving him a lot of props on that. He's putting a lot on me when he's saying that. But, yes, I mean, the first time he came in, he said a lot of the same things that we're seeing a lot of people say when they walk into our place for the first time is, wow, I cannot believe I'm in Campbellsville. But at the same time, we consider that's a big swell in the pride for us. Huge honor to hear people say that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that at the same time, I guess maybe is a little bit disparaging when we hear that comment is like, why don't you believe that this area, Central Kentucky, mm-hmm. Marion County, Adair County, Greene County, Taylor County, can have something quite like this. And we tried to do basically what we refer to it as big city charm.
Mm-hmm.
With small town hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you got a couple of blue collar guys okay, that work for a living behind the bar doing the mixology because we are enthusiastic about everything we do. And we've got some great people. Max Wise, Sarge Pollock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got all these great guys. Love and I Sarge. Can't even begin to tell you of all the great people that come in there. I could sit here and we would eat this podcast up in a hurry if I talked about and named off names. You know, the fine folks from Marion County that come, some of the dignitaries, okay, we use that word for now, from Washington County that came and spent Saturday night with us, and we talked about all the things going on with bourbon and all of the great things with how things are improving and the craft that goes along with not just mixology, but with bourbon and the atmosphere that we're spending in and the cigars.
Yeah,
I won't dig in a whole lot on what the speakeasy looks like for the cigars, but what I can tell you is that was the vision of my partner Anthony. I wish he could have been here with us tonight. He had some things come up, but
come on, Anthony, come see us.
This was his dream. He had everything in his head on what this could look like, and when you walk into that place, okay, that's his baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I can tell you is when people walk back there. And you walk through the cleverly designed airlock entryway that protects the public from smoke.
Right.
The big misconception about our cigar lounge is they think that Oak & Match is a cigar bar. They think you walk in and people are smoking cigars just everywhere, right off the bat. No, that's not the case. We have the lounge side. We have the bar side. This place is kind of like three places in one. And it's amazing to me that when you come in on the bar side, you know, you're kind of in an old-school Prohibition-style bar. But when you walk over, and it's completely open air, but when you walk over to the lounge side, and you notice how quiet it is, even when there's a lot of banter going on over on the bar side, how private it feels. Cool. And it's kind of the way we laid it out. And all that was by design. But then when you walk through to the cigar lounge, that's... I'll save the details for everybody to come check, but there has been a extreme wow factor for everybody that walks through there. So if you can imagine the best cigar lounge that you ever set foot into where you could sip your bourbon, have a cigar, relax, enjoy the company of others.
Yeah.
That was everything that Anthony kind of had in mind for this place, and that's everything it is.
So you talk about Anthony Hayes, your business partner, and we're gonna meet Anthony.
Oh, yeah, you will meet Anthony.
We will definitely meet Anthony. But this vision you mentioned working on your craft for 2 years, even before you guys opened the door to Oak & Match. And perfecting and knowing exactly what you wanted to be able.
Right.
Talk about that process.
The process. Let me tell you about the process. I can't even tell you how many years back that it goes. But Anthony was certainly the mixologist of the two of us. Honestly, all the credit goes to him. We're talking about the time that I would go back to his house. We would just leisurely as friends, and we've been friends for 30 years. Years plus. I don't even have a count over now. But, you know, he basically kind of introduced me. You know, I remember the first old fashioned that he muddled for me back then, the first one we had. I don't even have any idea how long ago that was. But over time, you know, as we developed a desire for the old school craft cocktails and then a desire for the different bourbons and stuff like that. How that evolved and developed over 10, 12, 15 years. And I really don't even know how long it was at this point. I couldn't even put a number on it. But here's the part that I can tell you. In January of 2022, and we had always, you know, we get together, we'd have a few drinks, sip some bourbon like we're doing right now.
Right, okay. Right.
And we would say, yeah, all these places that we like to go to and travel hour and a half, 2 hours to get to, how great would it be if we could put something like that here? You know, in central Kentucky, and put it within arm's reach of Taylor, Green, Marion, Adair, Washington, LaRue. How great would it be if we could do that? Early one Sunday morning, January of 2022, calls me up, says, hey, brother, get up, get ready. We're jumping in the car. We're going to take off to Justin's House of Bourbon. We're going to go have some drinks. We're going to check out a few bars. We're going to start this process of seeing what other people are doing, where we can learn from them, what mistakes that they're making, and what we can improve on. And after that day, we came back home, and we decided at that point that this is exactly when we were going to do this. Now, we didn't know where, when, how, why, building, location. We didn't know any of that. But we knew at that point that this was a decision we're making right now. It's kind of a pact that we made. We're going to do this. And the first thing that we knew right then is, number one, is we've got to have the best bourbon selection you're going to find.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not just bourbon, but any spirits. Spirits that people are not used to seeing, unavailable to them, never heard of. Things that we need to learn. And the next thing we knew is the recipes, the cocktails.
Yep.
They have to be right. They can't be mediocre. They can't come out of a modern cocktail guide. We've got to go into the history of all this and where these cocktails came from before they watered down into the 60s with cheap mixers and things like that. We've got to make sure we do this and do this right. So we started working out of bartender's guides. The first one we started working out of was printed in 1917.
Oh, wow.
And then we started going into bartender's guides. It was printed in the 1880s. Started seeing a lot of the crazy things that you never see. It's like, What are these ingredients? What are these liqueurs that we've never heard of, seen? You can't find them anywhere. We started working with a lot of them, and we spent literally a solid year. We would get together, kind of like you guys.
It's like you were almost like mad scientists, almost.
Kind of like what you guys are. You and I, yeah, guys are getting together right now. We would get together, and we would on Saturday afternoons, Sunday afternoons, whenever everybody was having their leisure time. But we were having a good time with cocktails, which is what you were going to do with cocktails and bourbon. But
yeah,
we were having a good time with making notations of all the recipes that we were coming up with. And I was jotting everything down and making sure we had all the notes. Because we knew that at the end of these sessions, all right, we're not going to remember this. We better get it all written down, because there's no way I'm going to remember this come Monday.
Yeah.
But that's what we continue to do. And from time to time, we would just get out and go look at properties and stuff like that. Long story short, which this story could go on forever, but long story short, basically what we ended up with is on Christmas break of December, it was in December of 2022,
mm-hmm,
we found this piece of property, been on the market for a while, just thought, you know what, let's throw an offer down on it and see what happens. We did, didn't expect a whole lot. Very next day, January 1st, 2023, accepted the offer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, awesome. And we were like, oh shit. Now
game on.
This is getting real.
We've been talking about this for a lot of years now. Now what do we do?
This is getting real.
It's like, and then we just kind of looked at each other. It's like, are we doing this? Are we going, you know, this is a big building. This is close to 5,000 square feet. It's awful big for a bar. We've been talking about cigar lounge. And long story short, we made the commitment. Okay, we're going to do this. So then we really went, we knew we were going to have about 60 to 90 days to close. So we went in overdrive on the cocktail menu.
Mm-hmm.
We sipping bourbon like crazy all along. So that was not really a whole lot of extra research needed to be done on that. But we went to work on that. And once we got that done, it was when we start to sign, when we do the sign on the closing, then we'll start the build project. And I started building the bar, and we started laying out the plans for everything, and we took possession in 30 days, and we worked hard on it, he and I.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we didn't hire much of this work out. We're both craftsmen and construction guys by nature. So we built this place up in about 6 months, and 1st of October we were open, and boom, the rest is history.
Wow.
Oh, man.
That's it.
What a story, man.
That's crazy.
What a story. It's also, you mentioned Anthony, obviously you two guys, but it's kind of a husband-wife partnership deal, too.
Oh, yes.
Anthony's wife, your wife. I mean, this is...
Anthony's wife, Erica, and my wife, Casey, they were with us from the get-go. Our inspiration, for the most part. Driving force when we were wore out and tired, okay?
Right.
All those things.
Yeah.
And they still work with us on it. My wife is doing a lot of things with her business and stuff like that, but she helped us get it open. She's had to pull back just a little bit because she's busy with classes. She's admin at the university. Erica is still putting a lot of work and effort into it. But they were with us from day one. I mean, this was all us. It wasn't just – I can't just say it was Anthony and I. It was Anthony, Erica, Casey, and I, and we were all working. I mean, if it wasn't sweeping floors, it was – throwing stuff in dumpsters, doing the demo from day one. We started demoing things in this place day one. We got the keys. We did a little celebratory thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the realtors took our picture. All right, we went in and started demoing shelves that night. Awesome. Worked till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So, and then that went on from the time we had the keys to the place to the time we opened it up. A lot of labor, blood, sweat, and tears in that.
Yeah.
A lot of it. And a lot of blood, too. When you're running saws and stuff like that, accidents will happen.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, Jim, we're going to have to take a break here real quick, but when we come back, not everything sunshine and roses, there's been some roadblocks. Whenever you try to make a change in anything in life, no matter if you're in New York City or little old Lebanon or Campbellsville, there's going to be roadblocks when you want to try to do something new. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that in the second segment.
Well, it's good stuff. I mean, that's cool. I'm always a big sucker for guys who and gals who have this dream and then put it into actuality, put it into motion.
Right.
Because you can have that dream, but if you don't take that first step, man, it ain't happening. These guys did.
They put their boxing gloves on and fought right through it, boy.
Went through a first segment without you giving me a hard time, too. I love that. We'll be back with more Two Shots right after this.
Because I did them.
Exciting news for Two Shots on a Barrel. We have a brand new sponsor. Hey, this is Jim Bowe for Two Shots, Good Buddies Brewing Company, our newest sponsor. I gotta tell you, they have it going on. Located in the heart of the bourbon country right here at 120 West Martin Luther King Avenue in Lebanon, Kentucky. All kinds of great craft pours, including many concoctions put together by master crafter Ray Osborne. He's also assisted by his beautiful bride, Beth Osborne. They are the newest and brightest and micro craft breweries in good old Kentucky. Make sure you go out to their Facebook page. You can easily find it at Good Buddies Brewing Company. And don't forget, when you're in town on the Bourbon Trail, to stop by Good Buddies Brewing Company. Again, located at 120 West Martin Luther King Avenue, Lebanon, Kentucky. Good Buddies Brewing Company. We're happy to have you as a sponsor right here on Two Shots on a Barrel. Pretty much comes a time in everybody's life where you need a good attorney. And Two Shots, we recommend the law office of Don L. McCauley.
Absolutely. If you want somebody to fight for your rights, man, I couldn't think of anybody better.
Criminal law, bankruptcy, you name it, Don McCauley, that's who you need to call. It is 692-0784 right here in Lebanon, Kentucky, located at 144 West Main Street in Lebanon.
We love Don McCauley, and you will too.
Hanging out with Chris Moss, Thoken Match.
I fixed my dog leash. I'm back.
See, there you go. You went one segment and you were actually kept your mouth shut and,
I did.
And
I
just did your job and now you're back on me.
I'm gonna have to go to the
Listen,
chiropractor.
All I can tell you is
you're
keep your
of being pulled off that chair.
Yeah.
I know.
keep your leash out of my feet.
Look, I'm a firm believer that I've always had ADD. I know I've always had it, but I'm a firm believer now that something's wrong with your feet. Something like hyperactive foot syndrome or something, because you just about kicked me straight out of the chair.
restless leg syndrome.
Could it have possibly been intentional?
It really could have.
I mean, I really believe it could have been intentional.
I mean, I had to take my headphones off because I thought I was going to fly across the room. I don't know what's going on with your feet, man, but I'm glad you're moving.
Get your leash out of the way, man.
Like, I don't know, guys. I'm not looking under the table. I wouldn't. See, I'll work this out.
You know, we were talking off the air, J-Bo. I was like, during that first set, I was like, God, who does Chris look like? He looks like somebody. So then I'm going to Google, but then I have no idea because the name's not coming to me. I'm like, that's not going to do any good. So I bring it up during the break, and he's like, there's two possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it was Deegan with
Pee Wee Herman, right?
Yeah, that's it.
With The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. and Robert Downey Jr. And I was like, that's it.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, Jim has a man crush.
No, I mean, I'm just I'm just saying it's like, you know, everybody's got a doppelganger, right, whatever they call it. Robert Downey Jr., man. That's you, brother.
You think so?
I do. I really do.
He has observed quite a bit more success than I have.
I mean, listen. He's done well for himself, but you're on your way. I'm saying? At Oak and Match. J-Bo, I know you are chomping at the bit because you talked about challenges that businesses face, and that's one of those things that we have – kind of read a little bit about in Taylor County with, you know, this idea. You and I, me more than you, are cigar guys. And I've always been one of these guys that they're – and if you listen to the cigar industry will tell you there is a distinct difference between premium cigars, mm-hmm, and other tobacco products.
Such as?
Such as cigarettes, such as anything else that's non-premium cigar related. But everything has been lumped together. Right. So it's premium cigars along with, you know, whether it's cigarettes or your little Swisher sweets or whatever you got. It's completely different. In my view, that's maybe a great promotional thing that the cigar industry has done. I don't think so. I just think that there is a difference in the two. But for so many people, they lump all of those together. I can remember when Chris and Oak and Match and you guys were kind of doing a questionnaire of people about what was going on in Taylor County, and I made a comment to someone to basically say essentially what I just said, cigars and other tobacco products is apples and oranges. And this, you know, I remember this lady got on there and was like, ah, meh, 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 meh. You know, it's the same thing. But there is that mindset, J-Bo.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Campbellsville's come a long way the last 10, 15 years coming from, you know.
Last couple of months.
Yeah, last couple of months. But I'm giving the benefit of the doubt alcohol on up. So, you know, changes are going to be hard for people who's never been around it. So I got to give them, you know, I understand where they're coming from. But you can't go throwing everything you have into something you don't understand.
That's very true. Very true.
And I'm afraid that's what happened to you. You got caught with a bunch of people, good intentions.
Yes.
But they were uninformed. And you pretty much had to school everybody on how things really...
I wouldn't define it as school. They educate. They had to educate.
Well, you had to go to school to get educated.
guys, I love y'all. I mean, y'all really getting each other's ass.
Yeah, it's every time we get together. It's exhausting.
Well,
Chris,
that's what makes it fun.
It's exhausting. Oh, but talk about a little bit about the challenge that you guys, you know, because it was a challenge for you.
You know, won't go into. You know, I could go, and anybody that follows us on Facebook and some of the things that I put out, I can go into a ton of detail, and I won't bore you with all the details on what we did with filtration here, all right? But the big thing on that is there is a difference, and the whole part about secondhand smoke, things like that, that's a battle for another day. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people like to lump premium cigars, cigarettes, you know, Swisher Sweets, all tobacco products in the same thing. The one thing that what a lot of people aren't understanding when it comes to premium hand-rolled cigars, number one, they're all natural. Okay, and number two, they're not about addiction. Okay. There's a difference between a casual smoke and enjoying a premium handheld cigar and nicotine delivery. Okay, and I'm not going to be stand up and preach on a stump or anything like that. I've had my struggles with nicotine addiction over the years with cigarettes and things sure. like that. And a lot of people came from that background. You know, their family grew up doing it and things like
we
that.
We are Kentucky, right?
We are Kentucky. So a lot of families, you know, the 50s and 60s and things are always slow to adopt in Kentucky. So slow to get off the cigarettes in Kentucky, too. But mostly what you're considering on that is that's all about nicotine delivery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all about the addiction. That's all about the nicotine fix. Okay, people are not fiending for the next premium hand-rolled cigar.
No.
Okay, they're not. Now, what I said about there being a fight for a different day, okay, yeah, the secondhand smoke from a cigar is probably just as deadly as the secondhand smoke from a cigarette. But the measures that we took to make sure that that smoke cannot make it to the lounge side and stays in the cigar lounge is the one thing that a lot of people that I guess you would say kind of a little bit too self-righteous for holier than thou believe that there was no way that that could happen. Okay, well, there's technology that exists that we put in place that says...
Judy Farmer.
We have something singing to us.
Yeah, we got something going on in the background here.
I have no idea.
She sounds important.
Oh, let's... I have no idea what that was.
Jim Reed,
a popular man.
Yeah, he had hit a button somewhere, and then some lady started telling me how.
What was she actually talking?
She was singing something, wasn't she?
I heard something.
All right, carry on. I'm not sure what that was.
Well, I derail myself from time to time. I do. I'm back on track. So that's like, not. Long story short is we did. You know, there are means in place that can make sure. Everybody knows COVID, so, I mean, there's means in place to make sure that you can do quarantine facilities. We figured out a way to quarantine the smoke.
Okay.
Okay. And doing that all in a way where it makes it comfortable for the one thing Anthony and I had been to is cigar lounges that don't do very well on filtering the cigar smoke.
Yes.
For the patrons. Okay. And for a cigar smoker, it's not comfortable to sit in a cloud of smoke where you have a hard time seeing anything. But you guys, we're close together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, if I can't look at you and see, is there a fire going out outside or is my eyes hazed over? Mm-hmm. Yep. So we did all of these things. But one thing that we made sure of is we know we're not a large demographic, Louisville, Lexington, places like that, that can have a place that would support a true cigar bar
mm-hmm.
where all you had to do was walk in the door and there's people blazing up cigars everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're a smaller demographic. You're not going to – that's not going to work here. You've mm-hmm. got to be able to – as from a business person's point of view, you've got to be able to provide a comfortable environment for everybody. So we've done that with the way we've set it up, and I've had so many people tell us that they didn't even realize there was a cigar lounge back
really?
There when there were a half a dozen, if not a dozen people, smoking cigars in our lounge and didn't even realize there was one in there.
Fantastic.
Because it doesn't come out. We could go into detail, and some of them said we couldn't do it. But we proved that we could. And there was a lot, not a lot, but there was some friction from some members of the community, very few. But most, once they finally realized that we were doing exactly what we said we were doing and not just doing it, I don't know, best term I can give you is half-ass.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
We were doing it the right way.
You know, and I'm trying, it's if you know me, you know I don't care. I'll just say how it
is.
Yeah,
I know that.
But I'm really trying to really
no,
be
No, I
nice
really
here.
Know that. Right. I know.
The people that complain the most are the people that would never step foot in your business
yes.
anyways.
Yes.
So just stay at home and stop it. You know, well, let us enjoy life.
And the thing is even if you don't enjoy the cigar smoke, unless you're just completely opposed to everything we're trying to do, you can come and I can put you in the front lounge and you're never going to be exposed to secondhand smoke.
Right.
But we understood as businessmen that we want to protect people from secondhand smoke.
Right.
It's our responsibility to do that. It's not my responsibility to tell you that you should not smoke a cigar. I smoke a cigar from time to time. I don't enjoy my lounge as much as I thought I'd be able to, which is kind of sucks.
Because you're up there mixing.
It's like, all right, guys, this is not working out the way I planned. Right. I thought I'd be able to enjoy my one cigar in 6 months, really. but that's the working aspect side of it. But Yeah, some people, you know, what can I tell you?
Debbie Downers.
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit. But doesn't last forever.
So tell me about this political fiasco you've been on. You've actually dabbled your toes in a little Frankfurt with House Bill 439. I have not dug into it.
Haven't dug into
it. So what you're about to tell me is all new to me.
Okay. Wow. How much of this can I talk about?
It's brand new to me because I'm incredibly surprised J-Bo would even know there is such thing as a House Bill 439.
House Bill 439. Let me see what I can say about this and why I'm bringing it up and why I know about it. House Bill 439 has a lot of things to do specifically with the way Kentucky is going to start approaching the vintage distilled spirits. Okay. I don't know how much you guys have been keeping up with it, but we have purchased vintage distilled spirits before.
All right, define vintage distilled spirits.
Vintage distilled spirits, as defined by the state of Kentucky, is any distilled product that is otherwise unavailable from a wholesale distributor in the Commonwealth.
Okay.
That's a very vague description.
Okay.
Okay, but basically what that's all about is any... One would think, if you look up the current version of what a vintage distilled spirit is, which that law went into the books in 2018, a brilliant piece of legislation, if you think about it, in terms of giving people access to things that are otherwise collected and unavailable. Okay, some of your hard-to-find bottles of bourbon.
Like that one up there?
Like Old Fitzgerald. Yeah,
like that one right there, okay. Now, interestingly enough, that bottle right there, based on some of the things that I recently had to deal with that I may not want to go into great detail on right now, might not qualify as a vintage distilled spirit because there might be a few people that still have some squat bottles of Fitzgerald Prime sitting on the shelf. And that's a squat bottle, even though that label's different.
So
it's very complicated.
I'm getting educated. Squat bottle. What is squat bottle?
Okay, if you look at what Fitzgerald looks like now, it's going to be in your taller bottle.
Okay.
They refer to that one as an old squat bottle.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
As the bottlings change over years with your bourbons and stuff like that, that's going to, you know, a lot of bourbons are going to change the bottling expressions over the years. You know what a bottle of Weller looks like today.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
Do you know what a old bottle of the squat bottles look like?
No.
Okay, the old squat bottles of Weller, which was the previous bottling on Weller bourbons before it is now, looks very similar to very old Barton bottles.
Okay.
The current very old bottles.
Yeah.
Okay. And those bottles ended in 2015, or 2017 is when they changed those.
Okay.
Okay, but they are still vintages.
Okay. Okay.
So I got to ask you guys, because I'm having a hard time getting an answer from this from anybody in the state, including... members of the Alcoholic Beverage Control and some members of the legislature, not the members I've been speaking with, but some members of the legislation that are trying to keep the word vintage in a gray area. What do you consider a vintage?
Jim Reed.
Okay. And what vintage would he be?
Oh, very, very old.
If you're defining vintage as an old relic.
Yes. That's you, buddy.
No, I would define vintage as...
What do you define it as in terms of wine?
Old. Been in the cellar for years. You can't buy it. And you can't go to your liquor store and find it.
You know what the wine industry refers to as a vintage?
What's that?
The year of the harvest of the grapes that particular harvest of wine was produced from.
Really?
Huh? It's all about the year. This is not about antique. The word vintage relates to the year of production.
Wow.
And if you look at wine, when you talk about a vintage, you know, a 2022 is a vintage.
Oh.
It doesn't seem like it would be, but if you look at a bottle of wine, it's got 2022 on it.
Mm.
That's the vintage of that wine. And the vintage is actually referring to of the year of harvest of the grapes that were used to produce that wine. Okay. Now, that has left a huge gray area, okay, in the vintage distilled spirits law in Kentucky that went into effect in 2018. And so nobody knows exactly what a vintage is. The only thing they defined a vintage as was something that was otherwise unavailable for purchase from a licensed wholesaler in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Okay, so if I have a just a representative of a wholesaler that stands in my bar and says they've never seen an on-premise licensee ever purchase enough products to get an allocated bottle. Did he just not tell me that that was otherwise unavailable? So a place like me, the only way I would actually have access for patrons to know what a bottle of Weller or Elijah Craig or E.H. Taylor or any of those tastes like, I would never be able to purchase enough because I'm not a large liquor store.
Right.
I would never be able to purchase enough product from the large beverage company that owns this one specific distillery to actually obtain one of those bottles. So the only way I would be able to do that is go for a previous year's bottling or a vintage, a 2022 vintage or a 2023 vintage, especially since they've told me that it was unavailable to me. So now we're getting into vintage versus why we won't define vintage. Now we're talking about allocation and why allocation is so prevalent. Very complicated.
We should have started this conversation before we had a couple of glasses of Lux Row.
My eyes are spinning in my head.
Okay, wait a minute. There's a lot I need to learn about here.
There's so much to talk about when it comes to vintage. Now, here's the one thing I can tell you about the vintage distilled spirits law. There's been a lot of abuses of it. The one thing that we have made sure that we maintain in what few vintage distilled spirit purchases we've made, and we haven't made many, but we've purchased some very good vintages. I've got some squat bottles of Weller Antique 107, Weller 12-year. I've got a first-run bottle of Elijah Craig Barrel Proof. Mm. Yeah, that was a first run, which means that was what Parker Beam was deciding to do with the dwindling 18-year-old and 12-year stocks after the fire in terms of bridging the gap on what his marketing strategy was going to be while other distilleries who had stepped up and were helping them after the fire. And everybody that knows the bourbon industry knows what happened. I mean, their stock was decimated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a very first run of that. And I purchased that on a vintage. But there was some gray areas that I ran into with the alcoholic beverage control, whether or not that qualified as a vintage. This is a 2011 bottling.
Oh, gosh.
It doesn't even look like the bottles that you find today. The label's not the same. It's got a date code on it. It's got a barrel proof on it, and this was tasted and decided on as a first run by a man that is no longer with the company and a master of the industry. If that's not a vintage, I don't know what is. But there's a lot of gray areas left in the law on what it takes to be a vintage. But sometimes these gray areas want to remain.
Okay, so circling back to House Bill 439.
Yeah.
Close. You were close.
I was close. I'm this is hard to follow, Jay, but really, I'm not very smart, and you are not as smart as I am. I know you're really struggling with this.
I'm smart enough to write it down.
So what's this House Bill thing?
House Bill 439, essentially what it does, and I'm sure you've been keeping up with some of the things in the news on, I won't mention names of places that have maybe abused this, but one thing that was always in the vintage distilled spirits law is that you could only buy 24 bottles of vintage distilled spirits from any one seller in a 12-month period.
Okay.
When you did that, you had to declare to the Alcoholic Beverage Control that you purchased, what you purchased, where you purchased it, who you purchased it from, name, address, phone number, and everything. Basically a declaration saying, I've purchased a bottle of vintage distilled spirit from this private seller.
Okay.
It was an unlicensed seller, just a private collector. So if I wanted to purchase a bottle from you, from your collection, I'm allowed to do that. I can purchase 24 bottles from you in 12 months.
Okay.
That's the maximum I'm allowed to do, and I have to declare every single bottle. Okay, now that's pretty straightforward. And there's nothing wrong with that law, and I agree with everything that's been done on it, but there were a lot of abuses. And I'm sure you guys have heard some of the names come up in the news on all the bottle seizures
and things like that. Yes, we have.
So there's been some abuses on it. So basically what they're doing with HB 439 is they're going in and basically putting little teeth into that in terms of the sellers. Okay, the sellers that are running around what I like to not so affectionately refer to as trunk slammers, that go around and find all your big distributors and retail stores that have these bottles, and they buy them up as fast as they can, and then they basically go on the secondary market,
yep,
which makes it impossible for any of us to get. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're obviously selling more than 24 bottles in a 12-month period. Some of them are selling as many as 300 a month.
Wow.
Okay, so what HB 439 is doing is they're putting some teeth into that, as not just in terms of the purchaser having some legal issues to deal with there, but the sellers now have fines too. So if you as a seller goes around to five states, mm-hmm, and buys up 300 bottles of bourbon and think you're going to sell them to a vintage distilled spirit buyer, mm-hmm, in 1 month time, now you're liable for some legal issues because you've broke the law too.
So isn't, in your view, is that a good thing?
That's a good thing, really. I believe that is a good thing. But what the only thing that's been an aggravation for us in all this is nobody will still define the word vintage.
Okay.
Okay. And because there's some pending litigation on that, nobody can define the word vintage. And it was kind of left out of the new House bill, which is going on to the Senate right now, on terms of, is it a year? Is it a maturation season? Is it a distillation season? Is it a year of bottling? Wine defined it very easily. You go buy any bottle of wine, it's got a year on it. That's the vintage.
Makes you wonder how far up
but
this goes.
This goes into allocation a little bit. And when in doubt and knowing all the facts, one can only speculate.
Right.
But speculation sometimes is good intuition or instinct. Can we say that?
I swear, man, I've been looking for a white label Weller's for 5 years.
Sure.
Can't find it.
No.
Anywhere. And I did find it. $700.
Well, here's my thing on allocation for a place like us. Okay. A lot of your big stores are going to get them. They're going to have the buying power to buy all the product that is necessary for the big beverage companies to say, okay, you've bought enough from us, we can allocate one to you. And that's what I affectionately like to refer to as the ransoming of bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I have places, when I have distributors, and I'll not name no names, but when I have distributors stand in my place when we first open up and saying, you'll never get this, I'm the guy on the front line.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to sell a bottle that is inflated price on market or market price, and you know, I consider three price scales in bourbon. Okay. You got retail price, you got market price, and you got collector's price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you guys have all seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a man that's trying to decide whether that white label CYPB is worth it to you or not, are you going to go drop $500 for it? Or are you going to do what some of my patrons have said? I'm glad you've got this selection here because I wasn't sure if I wanted to drop $200 on that bottle before I came in here, and you let me do a half-ounce tasting for $10.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to your place.
Okay, and you can do that. Okay, we do everything on our menu is prices a two-ounce double, and I've got 125 bottles of bourbon behind the bar. You can do a one-ounce tasting for exactly half that price. You can do a half-ounce tasting for exactly a quarter of that price. What we're trying to do is get some bourbon awareness to people and let people taste the stuff, see what they did, see what they've got, see if they want to buy it before they make that decision as to whether or not of throwing $200 at that Dixon Deadman's 2XO Kentucky Gin, which I have, okay, whether or not it's worth it based on his other expressions. But if you are a bourbon industry, why is it so hard for a man like me, who is your frontline guy, who is the only means for you to taste this? And I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about a lot of the other bars that want to be bourbon bars and bourbon lounges and offer those tastings up. Why is it so difficult for me to get it when I can walk into some certain liquor stores in a bottle that I've been begging for 6 months? And I can't get because my little thing pops up on my online thing saying there is no stock for customer such, 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 such.
That's crazy.
And I can walk into a liquor store as I go out of town over the weekend. I see six cases stacked up there.
There's a Itsy Bitsy liquor store right down the street. Not going to call the name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
White Label Weller's right there. $700.
Not going to do it.
Dude, come on. That's crazy.
Now, why would you tell me that I can't have one of those at exactly. least a market price that I can let people enjoy that at a taste to decide whether or not they want to put that money into it? Because most people are not going to drop that in. Collectors will, but bourbon drinkers won't.
No.
Mm-mm. Bourbon no. drinkers will not drop that kind of coin on absolutely a bottle of bourbon not. Unless they've decided that it's worth it.
Yeah.
And if I can have it and I can sell it a half ounce at a time to let you have a taste of it, why would you deny me the option to have that?
I don't know the answer to that. So I would ask this question for bourbon buying 101 okay. for a business like you.
Yes.
You, in order to have a bottle of bourbon behind your bar, you have to go through a distributor?
Has to go through a distributor.
So you legal. Cannot go to Joe Schmo Liquor no, Store legally, and buy a bottle of Weller's White Label and put it in your bar and start selling it.
He no. can't even bring anything from home.
Technically speaking, you could bring things from home if you declared it as a vintage. But gotcha. now there's the gray area on what's a vintage. Okay, right. I have that 2022 bottle of that Lux Row.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I could declare that as a vintage that my business purchased from me, but that bottle looks a lot like one you could buy today, and there's some gray area that I have run into on vintage purchases.
So what's the penalty?
Just because this bottle, the penalty?
Yeah.
Penalty can be severe.
And it's just some random Jim Reed walks in, checks all your bourbon.
Or somebody drops an anonymous tip.
Right.
Wondering where you got this bottle of Elijah Craig.
Mm. Can I give you a bottle of 1970 Old Fitzgerald, 1849, 8 year old, and you serve it in your bar?
If I purchase it from you as a vintage distilled spirit, the way.
What if I gave it to you?
No, if you give it to me, no. You give no. it to me, I still have to declare it as a purchase.
Okay.
Okay. That's all how right. that works.
All right.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, this, the it's laws hard. Are that, the that, laws are strict, very that, very strict, and we follow them to the letter. But we ran into some speed bumps on a couple of vintage distilled spirits purchases we made.
You know, that would be part of the job I wouldn't like at all.
Oh, this is the part that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
I really wasn't. And I knew the law, and I don't know if you guys can tell from the way we're talking right now that I try to go through all the details, but I know the law on it. But there's a lot of arbitrary stuff still out there. Wow. So we're hoping some of this gets cleared up, and I think it's getting kicked to whatever judge decides.
Well, we're going to go with you to Frankfurt next time you head out there, man.
All right, we're going to take another break. We'll come back with our man. Dude, this is educational.
Absolutely, but I want to give a shout-out to all the distributors out there. If you're not giving my man what he wants, you know.
Well, you're going to have to deal with us.
Yes, Jim Reed's going to take care of business.
Yeah, okay. Back on Two Shots
right after. Back, Jack.
Right after this break.
Are you looking for a clean, fun podcast that you can relate to? Well, we've got it for you. Cross the Line, 1524, originates out of Indiana. Former high school rivals. Now our buddy's sitting around a speakeasy bar talking about common day events, common things. We keep it light, they keep it easy. It's a good time. Check out Cross the Line, 1524. You can find it on all the podcast apps and players. You can also check them out at crosstheline1524.com or check them out on Facebook, Cross the Line, 1524.
Lisa Kearns doesn't want to just sell you a house. She wants to find you a home. If you've been thinking about making a move, she'd love to help. She knows you've got many choices when choosing a real estate agent, but not all agents are the same. Her clients are the heart of her business, and she takes pride in providing exceptional service, knowledge, and transparency while helping you navigate the real estate market. With her by your side, every step of the way, she can assist you in real estate needs that make buying and selling a smooth, enjoyable process. Call Lisa Kearns, Realtor with Exit Realty Homestead, 270-402-4036.
For all your full-service auto repair needs, it's Big O Tires, two locations, Barnstown and Lebanon, J-Bo.
That's right. Billy Taft will take good care of you. Man, if you need new tires, new windshield wipers, whatever, Billy Taft has everything you need for your vehicle.
Two locations. If you're in town on the Bourbon Trail and tires messed up, whatever the case might be, you can stop in at Barnstown location or Lebanon. Give them a try. Billy Taft's the best in the business.
That's right. We love those guys. That's Big Old Tires of Barnstown and Lebanon.
It goes up high.
So I have to be careful what I say.
Man, I'm with you.
J-Bo.
All right, so that was...
You're taking notes over there.
I'm getting pissed off is what's happening.
No, I can't remember the last show that you actually took notes.
I don't like
notes. You're taking notes over there.
When it comes to, you know, my daughter went through the House Bill 44 with the mental health bill, so it's kind of changed my way on... I'm interested in it now, so it's kind of like when you mentioned House Bill 439, I'm like, wow. I got to dig into this and figure it out. But I figured I'd want to hear it from you first, then I'll jump in and figure it out. But, man, kudos to you for putting the boxing gloves on and putting up the good fight over there in Campbellsville.
Well, you know, I wouldn't say it's so much of a fight other than trying to just get involved with the legislation a little bit and understand what's going on. Now, don't get me wrong. They're doing the people I've dealt with on this, they're doing a lot of great stuff with trying to get this – unintended consequence that happened when the first vintage distilled spirit law came out in 2018, get it under control, okay? And there's going to be some big changes on what's going to happen with people that are purchasing vintage distilled spirits, and I'm on board with all of them. But getting that definition of what it is to be a vintage distilled spirit based on years, maturation season, distillation season, okay, all of these things, and get that gray area out of there so everybody understands exactly where they're at.
You want it to just make sense.
Absolutely.
That's all you're asking.
Make sense. Make everything else about it make sense, except when you everybody that's understood vintage.
Right.
In any other sense of the word, other than what the gray area is with the vintage sealed spirits law in the state of Kentucky, everybody else has always understood it was a year of production. Okay, a year of harvest season or a year of production or a year of distillation season, which I would think on this, or bottling season or anything like that. But the gray area is like, okay, your vintage on your bottle, you don't really get to have it both ways.
Right.
Okay, your distillers don't get to say this is a vintage and promote it as a vintage. And then other people say it can't be a vintage because this bottle looks like that bottle.
It's
all about the liquid that goes into the bottle. Okay. There could be a 1968 vintage of Miracle Whip because that bottle hasn't changed since
then. I hope not.
But
because
the bottle didn't change, it's all about the liquid that goes into the bottle.
Wow.
Because that comes from a different vintage of year, a different distillation season. Bottled and Bond even says that it's all about one distillation season, one master distiller. Even though there's two distillation seasons in a year, but it's all about when the liquid was produced in the harvest season and the aging season, maturation season, everything that makes bourbon what it is talking about the vintage characteristics of it. So you don't get to have it one, you don't get to have it one way on this side and have it completely different on the other side.
Right.
You got to, call it what it is.
Jim, you all right over there, man?
Yeah,
it's a lot to take in. Isn't it?
No, you know,
we got into some details.
All right, so you know where I'm at with this.
Where are you at with this?
I want to talk drinking.
Okay,
this has made me want to talk mixology.
Okay, we can talk mixology.
All right,
and so because that's what you guys do over there.
Absolutely.
I mean, you guys. So our good buddy Monica Pickerel. I'm just going to call her out.
Call her out by name.
By the way, J-Bo, she said you were a one shit on a barrel. And I'm a one shot.
I would not expect anything less.
All right. But with that said, Monica, I was talking to her at Good Buddies, who sponsors our show. We were talking about coming on with you, Chris, and she said the best old fashioned that I've ever had in my life was by Chris. She said listen, she didn't really say this, but I get it. You know, she likes Anthony, but she loves Chris. And she said, go to the right side of the bar because Chris will hook you up with the best old-fashioned you've ever had in your life. And she was talking about all this, the intricacies of what you do with respect to an old-fashioned, talking about the cherries and the cherry kind of like going down the glass a little bit. Dude, you all are making waves in Campbellsville, Kentucky because of the drinks you guys are putting out.
Yes, yeah. With respect to what she's saying about Anthony and I, we make them the same. Okay, we're following. You know, I'm the chatty one. Okay, and you know Monica's chatty too, so she might gravitate toward me a little bit. She might gravitate toward me just a little bit.
Yeah,
but you know I'm the mouthy one behind the bar. All right, Anthony's the strong, silent type, and he's the creative one.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm the mouth. He's the creativity. I'm the mouth. So there's no other way to explain that better than I can say that.
So what you're saying, Chris,
that being said,
is you and Chris, or you and Anthony, if I've got an old fashioned side by side, you'd put his up against yours.
Absolutely. Yeah. We worked on these together. All of our recipes, we work off of a recipe. We work off a cook. Okay, so to speak. We make everything is the same. We worked on these together, but there's only very few variations that ever take place with the old fashioned. And our old fashions we worked on hard. He and I are old fashioned snobs, and it was all about getting that right, getting that perfect, and we wanted to have the best old fashioned we'd ever had. Not necessarily the best old fashioned you'd ever had, but the best old fashioned we'd ever had. And considering we were kind of snobbish about this, okay, we figured if you tell me there's a better old fashioned out there, the next time I'll ask you where was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, where'd you have it at?
Right.
We're gonna go check this out and see what they're doing.
Right.
But we make all of our syrups in house. Everything is done from scratch. We choose a very specific type of sugar that we use for our syrups and a very specific type of blend for them. We went through so many batches of syrups for our old fashions, trying to get those dead on right. In terms of the old fashioned is the simplest drink to make in terms of ingredients, because it's literally just spirits, bitters, sugar, and water. Okay, but the ratios are unbelievably complex when it comes to trying to get that dead on right.
Yeah.
And the type of sugars that you use and things like that. But we do adjust a little bit, you know. We've got the house recipe that we use is going to take care of 99.9% of everybody. But there are some people with some discerning taste. And what I can tell you is I've never made an old fashioned you didn't like twice. So we listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, when we make a drink for people, when we make a cocktail for people, we listen to what you say. We've got 75 handcrafted cocktails on the menu. A lot of these are using liqueurs that most people have never heard of. So when people are asking for recommendations, what we're trying to do is I'm trying to ask you questions. What did you have at the last places you were at? What do you like? What are your flavor profiles? And I'll give you a suggestion. And we do the same thing with the old fashioned. So if I make the old fashioned on our house recipe, if you tell me it's a little too sweet or you'd like it a little more bourbon forward, I can go off that one basic one and make you one and judge by the way you say you like that one. And I can change that up about five different ways to make sure I've customized that old fashioned to what you want. Very rarely do we ever get that wrong twice. Usually when I make you the second one, you're going to tell me it's the best one you've ever had, period, hands down, and I'll keep making it for you that way. But I know exactly where to take it. Based on what I've learned about it, my wife got so tired of me making old fashioned. I would like try this syrup, and at you know five, so you're beats, not, she would you're, like I'm going to bed. No more.
So you're not going to take your house recipe and say this is the best old fashioned you've ever had in your life. You're going to listen to
sure.
The Absolutely. Person in front of you, and they're going to say, Well, you know, and you're going to find that.
Yeah, I'm going to take my house syrup because I know that's dead on right, and I'm going to take the what few bourbons that I know work very well, bourbons and rice, if you want a rye whiskey. I'm going to take what few of those that I know work very well, and then I'm going to adjust based off those. Now, that's going to be a combination of maybe about 12 different ways I might make that old-fashioned if you don't like the one that I've decided was the 99%er.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do tell most people is don't go to the calls. Don't call a spirit for the old-fashioned. Talk to me about, let me make you one. And then you tell me what you liked about it or what you need out of it. Because I can take, and what he and I both can do, is we can take, whether it be an 80 proof, a 90 proof, or 100 proof, whether you want it a little more sweet, a little less sweet, I can take one of about four different bourbons, and I can make you the best old-fashioned you've ever had without going to a call spirit, which will make that drink cost quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember what an old-fashioned was originally designed to do. Take inferior spirits and mash the flavor of them, make them palatable.
There you go.
You don't learn that everywhere, Jay. You don't.
That is what an old-fashioned was meant to do. And an old-fashioned, you got to consider how old that drink is. It wasn't named an old-fashioned until James Pepper made it famous by calling it an old-fashioned. Says it was created in the Pendennis Club in Louisville before he carried it off to New York and all those things, but they referred to it as the old-fashioned cocktail. Well, the old-fashioned cocktail, to be an old-fashioned cocktail, you had to be all around for a while, didn't you?
True.
Okay, the use of water, spirits, bitters, sugar was in use in the 1820s. And as it became popular... people refer to it as the old-fashioned cocktail. So there's a running and a debate over whether the old-fashioned or the Sazerac was the oldest cocktails in the United States. Sazerac claims it is the oldest, but the old-fashioned, being old-fashioned not long after the Sazerac was created, does that mean the old-fashioned was the oldest?
Yeah.
And the old-fashioned is a drink that's evolved about thousands, hundreds of thousands of times over the last couple hundred years.
I mean,
people have been using, for over 200 years, people have been using spirits, whiskey, okay, and sugars, bitters, and water in a specific ratio to make basically inferior spirits be more palatable.
Wow.
Kind of like what a lot of your early 20th century and late 19th century cocktails that we work with. That we're now using superior gins in. One thing we noticed that when we started working out these bartenders' guides from like 1917s and turn of the century, a lot of gin. Very few bourbons in most of these. Very few rye whiskeys. A lot of gin cocktails. But you got to consider the prevalence of gin at the time. Okay, and most of your gin, bathtub gin, not so good.
Right.
And they were used in a lot of your higher quality European liqueurs to make these cocktails, to make the gin more palatable. It's amazing how good they are now that there's good gins out there. And some of these bourbon guys, to get their way through while their barrels are aging, to produce some of these fantastic gins. Monk's Road, Castle and Key are producing some fantastic gins. Fantastic gins. And there's so many, the way we're using some of these, it gets a little crazy. The numbers of liqueurs that we have and the cocktails that we're making, I mean, it gets a little nuts to think about all of them.
All right, Chris, when I go out, and I don't get to go out much.
You don't get to go out much.
Because I have children running me ragged, and Jim Reed always needing something. But
here we go.
If I go somewhere and I order a whiskey sour, and it comes out with no foam on it.
That's not traditional.
Which means there's no egg whites in it. So it ruins my night. Ruins my day. Really? I mean, because it doesn't taste good. It really doesn't. Please tell me you put egg white in your
whiskey sours. We do put egg whites. All of our sours use egg white. The funny part about this is, I got to tell this story. The funny part about it is the remember I was telling you the story about the first bartender's guide we pulled out was a 1917 bartender's guide.
Jeez.
Okay, this was not long after that trip to Lexington. They came and got me and said, we're gonna figure out whether or not we're going to do this shit or not.
Right.
And we did. So we got these old bartender's guides. And the first thing that we looked at is like the first two things we said is like, holy shit, they're using a lot of gin in these. And the second thing we said was, what the hell's up with all the egg whites? We were like everybody else. We, you know, whiskey sours. All of your sour mixes, we grew up knowing them just as being powdered mixers.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
It was either a sweet and sour mix or maybe a powdered mixer or something like that. But you got to consider what original craft bartenders were doing at the first of the 20th century and the latter half of the 19th century. There was no, you didn't go to the ship, you didn't go buy rose grenadine. You didn't have simple syrups. There was no mixers available. So the way you made your sours was with fresh squeezed lemon or lime juice. And the way you balance that out for a sweet and sour to take the tart off of it is with egg whites. Now, that's something that your grandma and your great-grandma and everybody that's ever made a meringue always knew. Because what are you doing when you make a meringue? What's the ingredients in it?
The sea egg whites.
Egg whites, citrus, lemon, and sugar. And that's essentially what you're doing with a sour. You're actually taking those three components and you're doing a dry shake and a shaker before you add the booze and the ice, and you're starting the emulsification process of making a meringue. And then you incorporate your spirits into it and your ice, and you make your sour out of it. And it gives it that silky texture and that perfect little frothy layer the top of it. But that is what you're – and this is nothing new. This is what was happening 150 years ago. But that's what happened before everything got cheapened and watered down in the 60s and 70s when Tang came out and instant coffee came out. And it wasn't long after that that your packaged whiskey sour mix that your granddad's had.
Yeah.
Everything was trying to go to instant.
Yes.
Well, instant's not always better.
No.
And that was the one thing is I got to tell you, that was one of the first things we looked at each other. It's like, what the hell's up with all these egg whites in these drinks?
I'm so glad that you have them because it's a deal breaker for me.
Once you've tried them like that, there's no going back.
There's not. And I have to give Laura Abel, a local girl here, she said, you got to try with egg white. And ever since I've tried it, it's like game changer.
No going back.
So we got a couple questions since this third segment. We want to get to know what do you like? What's your favorite drink?
My favorite drink? The old fashioned is probably always my go-to on the favorite. No, there's no big secret on that. When all else fails, an old fashioned is where to go to. Now, there's a couple of cocktails that we do make. Obviously, the whiskey sour is fantastic. Number two drink in the place is a handcrafted cocktail that Anthony came up with that I affectionately named the Sabin's Delight, which is a funny story on that. We were making a lot of cocktails that day, and I'm the history man. He's the creative guy. But that's the number two one. Maybe we'll get into that story because that's a long story too. But a drink called a Rusty Nail. I've always referred to getting away from bourbon just a little bit. But there's a drink called a Rusty Nail. It's a very easy drink to make with a good scotch and Drambuie, which I like to refer to as the grilled cheese sandwich of cocktails.
Nice.
Okay. It's like when there's nothing else that you can have, and every once in a while, you know, kind of like in terms of food, when nothing else sounds good.
Mm.
Okay.
Good grilled cheese. A
grilled cheese sandwich. Yep. You can't deny that. That's going to tide you over, right? And that's, we make a few of those, and we're introducing a lot of people to scotch. I know we're in bourbon country.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But there's nothing wrong with that. It's good whiskey. So we're introducing people to that, but. Wow, there's a few of my favorites that I crafted late one night. There's one that I've nicknamed the Remus Revenge.
I like that name.
And if anybody knows anything about history, maybe by the time we get together again, I'm going to give you guys a homework assignment that I've given everybody else. All right. It's named after George Remus.
Yep.
We use George Remus in the bourbon, or as the bourbon in the cocktail. It's a walnut. It has a little walnut hint to it. So I use a Nocino, an Italian green walnut liqueur, which is extremely hard to come by, and I'm struggling to find. But it's a complex cocktail. It's got five ingredients in it, but the main base spirit is Remus.
Mm-hmm.
And I named it the Remus Revenge, as a nod to history. So maybe by the time you and Guy get back together, that's your challenge right there. You can tell me why I named it the Remus Revenge and how Mr. George Remus got his revenge.
All right.
I love that, man.
All right, Jim, homework.
Homework.
Now, we have some guys on another podcast, Across the Line 1524. They are horrible, horrible at smoking cigars.
Which, by the way, one place we are 100% taking the guys from Indiana to is Oak and Match.
Absolutely.
There is no doubt about it.
VIP spot set up.
Yeah, we are going to Oak and Match when April 21st-ish.
2021.
We are coming to Oak and Match.
So they're horrible at smoking cigars. I mean, they struggle, okay? They're Swisher Sweets or nothing, okay? So when they're here, they're coming.
Okay.
For a new cigar-smoking bunch, what cigar would you tell them when they walk in your door, which they are going to?
Okay.
What cigar do they need to start with?
They're a Swisher Sweet bunch.
Oh, they are horrible. They're just
light-bodied, just not used to
premium.
They're kind of like J-Bo when it comes to cigars.
Exactly like me.
I keep a few very specific cigars just for that reason. There's a lot of people that are new smokers that have never... They're not getting into the big 50-ring cigars, okay, or the Maduro wrappers or something that's a really bold smoke. But I keep a few in smaller cigars, some Demitas cigars. H. Upman makes a fantastic, really light-bodied smoke. It's a tiny cigar. When you look at it, you're going to think, well, this is the size of a Swisher Sweets. It's a Demitas. It's a small cigar. But a lot of your good cigar makers, they do make smaller selections, smaller size selections. Still the same premium hand rolled, the same premium tobacco they use in their larger hand rolls, but they're good cigars and they're mild. I got selections all for you on that. You don't have to go to a Presidente or a Churchill.
So I brought two cigars today. All right. And Jim knows that I'm more of a Connecticut guy, and that's about all I know about it.
Connecticut,
but I'm gonna show it to you while Jim talks to you. I'm gonna go get them and show them to you, and you tell me rank these cigars if they're a good choice or not. Because usually, if the darker the cigar, the quicker I'm going to be sick.
Okay, while you're doing your little thing and going to your cigars, I will talk to Chris and I will ask.
Don't mess up.
So you guys have got it. You've already talked about it. The Cigar Lounge. It sounds fantastic, and that's as much as I'm looking forward to an old fashioned by you, Chris. I'm looking forward to. I'm going to pull you away from the bar, just so you know. Sure. We're going to sit in there and smoke a cigar.
You think so?
But selection wise, over at Oak and Match, what's my selection variety that I can go in there and be able to select? How many different cigars would you say?
I'd say as far as the number of different selections, we probably got over 100.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty substantial.
Yeah, we probably got over 100 different selections.
Yeah.
We've got several thousand cigars.
Very nice.
In the walk-in humidor.
Very nice.
And these are cigars that I'm familiar with. You know, I didn't just go what the distributor was trying to push on me or anything
right.
like that. We went, we wanted to make sure we picked good cigars.
Yeah.
And something is a lot of people in the area are trying to acclimate themselves to cigars or, that are, I wouldn't say acclimate, that's not really a great word for it, just trying to become familiar with them and they enjoy a cigar, but they just don't have the selection available to them. I wanted to make sure we had a good selection, a good availability of different types of cigars that were not just whatever the distributor was trying to push on me at the time. We're very picky about the things that we do.
So we talk about bourbon and some of those premium, we talked about the white label Weller.
Yeah.
You just can't find it anywhere, and I can go over to Oak and Match. And it's a similar thing when you talk about cigars, whether it be a Padron or whether it be a Davidoff or whatever. Can I go over there, and if I'm like, listen, I can't afford a box of a Padron anniversary cigars.
Say that again.
Padron.
Oh.
But Can I get that kind of cigar?
Sure. I mean, we're going to say we can go. Let me see if I can get my Spanish R's rolling right.
Yeah.
If you, a Padron.
Yes.
Perdomo. Arturo Fuente.
He's impressive.
Macanudos.
This man is impressive.
We'll keep it going.
This man is impressive.
You're Davidoff's.
Yes.
You're my father's.
Yes.
You're all of us.
So I've got a tremendous selection. You've sold me. Okay. You've sold me right
some
there.
Of your infused cigars, your Buffalo Trace infused cigars.
You have
we're keeping a lot of these going.
Chris, you've sold me right there.
Jim just peed his pants.
No. Listen, I can go over there and I can get
the table. You check that.
Listen, I can get a premium pour, and I can pair that with a premium cigar at Oak & Match.
Yes.
You've sold me.
And even if you don't want a bourbon, I have a lot of people that ask me, what is a good cocktail to go with a bourbon besides an old-fashioned?
Yeah.
And some people want a little bit of a sweeter cocktail. Be surprised. And some of these, I actually have people tell me, and I'm a little shocked about what pairs well with them, too. Like I said, we had some dignitaries from Washington County.
Yeah, sure. Here.
I did not know that a bourbon or a brandy Alexander would go well with an Arturo Fuente.
Ah.
But it did.
Shit, I wouldn't either.
But you know what? The right way to smoke a cigar and the right way to enjoy a cocktail and the right way to drink a bourbon, there's only one right way to do it. You know what that is?
The way you like it.
Exactly the way you like it.
You know who is an Arturo Fuente guy?
What?
You should know
Arturo Fuente.
You should know the answer to this. You should know the answer to this because you supplied him with tequila one night. Dan Tominski.
Oh, that's
Dan
right. That's
Tominski,
right.
Okay. Who is with Alison Krauss back in the day, tremendous musician. That is his go-to cigar.
He smokes cigars.
Arturo Fuente. Let me tell you something about Arturo Fuente. When in doubt, even if there's no Macanudos in the house, no Partagas in the house, no H. Upmans in the house, no Monte Cristos in the house, no Romeo and Julietas in the house. If it's all a bunch of stuff and you don't recognize, if you walk in and you see an Arturo Fuente.
Go with it, J-Bo.
You cannot go wrong with an Arturo Fuente.
You got it. Okay. You got it.
Now, if we're talking about tequila, have you ever had Don Julio 1942?
I haven't.
Okay, I got it at the bar.
All right.
And it's one of your few sipping tequilas.
All right.
Okay, and there are some, and we love bourbon around here, and we love bourbon at Oak & Match, but we love all our spirits. We give everything a chance. That is tequila that might make you smack your mama.
Nice. Look, people were asking me, they're like, why was you asking for a limo the other day? It's because I'm trying to get to Campbellsville and back.
Have you ever heard of Armagnac?
No.
Armagnac is older than cognac. Comes from a very specific region in France, and I think I'm the only place in the state of Kentucky that keeps a bottle of Armagnac on the bar.
Nice.
And it is exquisite. Hmm. If you like,
I
enjoy all spirits.
I might just curl up on a couch.
So I have not even been taking notes, and I've got like 50 questions, and we're running out of time, and so I've got time for maybe like two questions, which we're going to come back to. When we started talking cigars, you brought out a couple of cigars,
yes,
J-Bo.
My last two.
For Chris to take a look at.
All right, what's the first one we have?
The Blantons.
There? The Blantons?
Yeah, the Blantons that you got right here. I know that one. Very good choice. Good
all
choice.
Right, good.
Now,
all
let
right.
me see
all
what
right.
you got here.
Is that Perdomo?
I don't know.
You got a Perdomo 10th anniversary, which I have a smaller version of a Toro at the bar.
Uh-huh.
This is an excellent smoke.
Sweet. Good.
You have two A good plus. Selections, my friend.
A two great selections there.
Win-win right there.
All right.
Win-win.
Nice.
You guys are killing it. I got to say, where's your competition? Because, you know,
Let me dispel one thing about that on competition. I've got a lot of people that ask me about competition in Campbellsville. Here's the thing. Here's my take on competition. We are not in competition with each other, okay? Everybody is doing something a little bit different. People want something different, okay? What's McDonald's competition? Okay, if McDonald's destroyed all their competition, how quick would you get tired of eating Big Macs?
Very much so.
Okay. We are not in competition with one another. every place that is doing something like what we're doing or doing something a little bit different than what we're doing, okay, all the other places in Campbellsville, all the other places in Marion County, we are all here to serve the people that enjoy what we're offering up.
Gotcha.
Okay. In the high tide, all ships rise. If
Debo, write that down.
Write it down.
If we think we're trying to put each other out of business and we, any one of us, will gain from this, we are sorely mistaken. Because nobody wants to come in Oaken Match every night. But nobody wants to go anywhere every night.
Mm-hmm.
We have to offer, we all have to do the best we can do to offer the best variety and the best service we can to each and every one of the people that we serve. And if we think that we've got it all figured out, we're sorely mistaken.
Yeah.
We have to just strive to be the best people we can be and do the best that we can and show people that there is a reason to come out of the house and not go home and sit on the couch and watch sitcoms or bad reruns or something like that and come out and socialize. One of the proudest things that I see when I see at Oaken Match, how many times have you guys gone to a restaurant and you see a whole family sitting together and everybody's on their phones?
Everybody
is sitting there.
Every time.
The proudest moment that we have at Oaken Match is I can look and see that everybody is laying their phones down. Everybody's talking, laughing, having a few drinks, talking about what they did yesterday, what they're going to do tomorrow, how good a time they're having tonight. Nobody sits and stares at their phones. People are engaging in the art of socializing again, enjoying each other's company.
I love it.
Okay. And one thing I can tell you about in terms of competition, if I can have anything to say for the competition, if there's anything such as competition, is we're really kind of all in this together, because if we don't all work to entertain the people and give them a reason to come out, they're going to go home. Okay? That's exactly how it's going to be. And we all need to work together on that, because there again, in the high tide, all ships rise.
Love it.
So we're about to wrap things up, but mm-hmm. So to change that spin a little bit.
Okay.
So let's don't talk about competition.
Okay.
Let's talk about what makes you unique.
What makes us unique? We're focused on craft. We're really focused on craft. I spend a lot of time thinking about what the craft that we do and the environment we offer and the atmosphere we offer, how it makes you feel. Okay. I'm only in the business of this for just a few months. And you know the story. I've sat there and talked about it on the podcast. I've been in the business of customer service and in an industry that's a little hard to scratch out in Central Kentucky, but I've been doing that for 30 years. What I've learned in that time is perseverance and your desire to please people, okay, is what makes the difference. And if you ever let that go, that's when your business starts to decline. And basically what you've done at that point is you've kind of lost your desire, you know, you've lost your passion for it. And if you maintain the passion and you try to please people and offer people something new and different and you keep doing that, well, that'll come forward. And it'll bear fruit at the end.
I'm sold, J-Bo.
Yeah.
I'm 100% sold. I was sold before Chris came on today, and now I'm like, I'm ready to go there.
Look, man, I got a birthday coming up.
You got a birthday coming up.
I'm ready to go. I mean, we already talked about.
And we still do a birthday cocktail free. We still do the bartender's guarantee. I forgot to tell you about that when we were talking about that earlier. If I have spent the time and chatted with you and basically offered you a cocktail or gave you a recommendation, if I missed the mark, you know what I do? I take that back. That one belongs to me, and we start over.
Wow, that's
you know awesome. Why? Because I like every one of them on the menu. Yeah. So I'll dispose of it properly, and we'll move on that's to awesome. One that you like.
I've only got one bone to pick with Chris.
Uh-oh.
So.
What's that?
I missed something. I missed a mark.
We, listen, we are, would you not say, J-Bo, we're one of, like, the premier podcasts in the Bourbon Trail?
You know, we're one of them. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I could see like a two shots type of drink.
Yeah, we do need a two shots.
You know,
y'all want me to craft y'all a cocktail.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I think that, you know, you've gotten to know us a little bit. You've gotten to know how J-Bo is, how I am. You can kind of, the mixologist that you are, you can kind of put that together.
Name it. Awesome. Name it. No, I'm serious. I actually, we've got Milliman Green coming up from Texas. Okay, they're going to be here in the middle of, toward the end of April.
Okay.
Okay, and we're going to do a little tasting session, a little mixology session. I promised them I would craft them a cocktail for when they came out of their bourbon. I made a Texas Revolver.
I like it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm asking you guys, let's put the cart before the horse a little bit.
All right.
Name the cocktail, and I'll make it.
I like it. Two shots on a barrel.
Two shots on a barrel?
Yep.
Keep
yeah.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. Two shots
yeah.
on a barrel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I got some ideas on that. How much time do I have? You want it by Saturday? What are we talking about?
Listen,
I'll probably start working on it tomorrow.
So, you know, what would honestly, J-Bo, be impressive is when we walk in with the Cross the Line guys from Indiana.
Oh, there'll be one with your name.
And we're like, you guys need to go talk to Chris and order the two shots on a barrel. And then. That would be like...
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be incredible.
I can do that.
You're the man.
I'll probably have it done by tomorrow night.
You are the man. You are the man.
I'll probably have it done by 5 o'clock.
I'm so excited.
I got to tell you, man. Listen.
What?
In all sincerity, Chris, you guys, just an incredible... And I'll come back to this.
Okay.
This is what I'll come back to. Is, you know, so many times people have dreams...
They do.
They never take that step. You and Anthony took that step, and when you start hearing all of the reviews, when you start hearing the people like Monica saying, this guy, Chris, is my dude. This guy, Chris, is my dude.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got... really have something special. And you know, listen, I know you don't like to talk about competition, right?
Right.
But you guys have something really unique and special. You take it back in history.
Oh, love the history.
You know, it's not like you're doing it the easy way. We talked about, you know, call it controversy or what you want to call it, J-Bo. You guys are going about it the responsible way, too.
Yes, absolutely.
And... it's a home run.
It's a home run. The only thing I wish he would do is bring back the mullet he used to have.
Oh, you used to have a mullet?
How do you know about that?
J-Bo.
I told you I had some dirt on you, buddy.
Wait a minute now.
Have a mullet?
That mullet was long gone.
I know. Lisa Kearns told me you used to have the best mullet in the whole world.
What year was this?
I think I lost a mullet in like 1998.
Are you serious?
I had the Billy Ray.
Talking Billy Ray?
Yeah, I had the Billy Ray mullet. I mean, it was like down.
Lisa's, you came out with the dirt, J-Bo.
I don't know what lumbar spine
is,
but it was like
that's awesome.
How did you know about
Lisa that? Lisa Kearns, man. She said you had the best mullet in Campbellsville for the longest time.
I'm going to have a talk.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Have you been texting with her during this whole show?
No, I met with her before the show. So
how long before the show?
10 minutes before the show.
She told you to bring the mullet up.
She said you need to ask him about
it. Do you have anything else, Ava?
I got pictures of it. Oh, I don't have it with me, but my wife has pictures. Yeah.
That is awesome.
She is a big fan of your
and
place.
But you know what? You know, the mullet's coming back. I never thought it would. They don't look like mine.
I could see it. Yeah. Halloween 2025. I could see it. Halloween 2025. We have a costume party at Match and Oak, and you bring out the Billy Ray Cyrus look, Chris. Yep.
It would probably take that long to grow that mullet back out. I mean, it took a while.
That's dude, awesome. Man,
thank you so much for coming in, brother. We appreciate
you. Thank y'all. I mean, it has been a fantastic
and
night.
Thank you for that Lux Row you brought in today.
Yes, fantastic.
Not bad, huh?
First time ever for me. It's
hard to find.
Double bottle. Single barrel Lux Row. It was fantastic.
Now let's talk a lot about that. Maybe I can get my guys at Lux Row to this whole allocation thing. Uh-huh. Now that I've purchased it, legally somewhere else, not as a bar,
right?
And brought it over here to share it. I purchased that personally, but I couldn't get it from my bar.
Oh, maybe my gosh.
It was fantastic.
Work some things out with me so I can actually share this with other people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, when J-Bo comes over and gets his whiskey sour, I'm going to, you know what I'm going to ask for. What's the bourbon you're going to put in it?
If we start off, we're going to, depending on how you want it, I'm going
to. I want it Chris style.
You want it Chris style?
Yes.
I'll probably put a bottle in bond in yours.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah.
And to believe it or not, I'm going to use either an Evan Williams bottle in bond or an old granddad bottle in bond. And let me tell you right now, and this is no joke, if you want to go with a full call spirit, it'll get lost in it. Don't go with a high dollar. Take my word.
So we're just talking about just a 100 proof bottled in bond old granddad.
Yeah, 100 proof bottled in bond old granddad, either old granddad or Evan Williams, makes a great old fashioned.
I'm there.
You try to go anything better, it gets lost in an old fashioned. You want to go anything better? Go with the straight bore.
Yeah.
Enjoy the calls neat.
Yeah.
If you want a good old fashioned, it's going to cost you a whole lot less money.
I'm just going to tell you, we're going big dog on the cigar, though, right? We're going big dog on the cigar.
I got a 1990. If you want to go big dog on a cigar, but you want something kind of mild, I got a Maduro Wrap 1997 Macanudo Vintage.
J-Bo, that's you, man.
It looks like it's an ass kicker.
Right.
Okay, but because of its really dark Maduro wrapper, but the filler on it and the binder on it is so mild because it's Macanudos are known for being a mild cigar. Even though its wrapper looks very dark and assuming, it adds a perfect amount of spice, but it is still a very, very mild smoke.
Look, man, make sure I get that. Nothing else, because these 1524 guys are going to be watching me, and I got to act like I know what I'm doing. I got to act
like
I'm...
That's a big, fat cigar that you could actually accidentally inhale that cigar in front of these guys.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to be surviving it.
Thank you, Jesus.
They're going to give you shit.
Thank you, man. Gosh.
Hey, man, Chris, we appreciate you, brother.
Fantastic.
We are, we're going to come see you. Absolutely, positively, we're bringing the Indy out of guys.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Yeah.
You're like the man. Robert Downey, baby. Robert Downey. All right. For Two Shots on a Barrel, I'm Jimbo.
J-Bo.
Adios. We'll see you next time.